It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the state attorney general has called sex trafficking one of Wisconsin's toughest criminal justice challenges. We'll hear from a state lawmaker about a new bill looking to solve the problem by decreasing the demand for prostitution.
First, President Trump's latest Twitter storm could create obstacles for the revised immigration executive order he signed. Trump called it a, quote, watered-down version of the first travel ban, and he used the phrase travel ban.
The revised travel ban restricts immigration from six Muslim-majority countries. It has been tied up in the courts for months now, as challengers have called it an effort to discriminate against Muslims.
Next week, arguments are scheduled to be filed with the U.S. Supreme Court. As it enters a critical new legal stage, some are concerned that the president's tweets could undercut efforts to restore the ban.
Jordan Fabian is the White House correspondent for The Hill, and he joins us now to tell us more. Jordan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jordan, first off, can you tell us a bit of what the president said on Twitter after the London attacks?
Well, the president had a lot of thoughts to share on Twitter after the London attack. He criticized the mayor of London, taking out of context something he said about police presence on the streets to make it seem like he was trying to downplay the terrorist threat facing his city. And he also then turned to the on the domestic front, the travel ban that's been put on hold by the courts, and arguing that the London attacks are a reason for the courts to unfreeze that policy. But in the process of doing that, he said some things that could get him into trouble in the courts as the Supreme Court considers whether to take this up.
How could the president's tweets work against efforts to restore the so-called travel ban?
Well, his lawyers have made a painstaking effort to argue in court that the new travel ban that was issued in May is substantially different from the one issued in January, and that it does not target Muslims. And what the president said was that the new version is quoted, a watered-down, politically correct version of the original policy. So, you know, we've seen judges and lawyers arguing against the administration use the president's comments to argue against why this travel ban should be put into place, and we can expect to see that happen again when the Supreme Court hears these arguments next week.
And afterward, the ACLU was among those who tweeted. They said, glad we both agree the ban is a ban. So can you lay it out for us legally, Jordan, in terms of the actual phrase travel ban? Legally, what might that imply?
Well, it implies that he's targeting a certain segment of the population. What the government has tried to argue is that this is a policy that's rooted in national security concerns. And part of that is that they only needed to pause travel from these countries temporarily while they put in place stronger vetting procedures. But if you're saying it's a ban, then you're saying something different about these countries and saying that you know, perhaps you're targeting the people in these countries for a different reason. So that's why some of the legal experts are saying this could get him into trouble.
And the president has also said that extreme vetting is going on. How does that aspect play into this?
Well, like I said, the travel ban was put into place so that the Department of Homeland Security could, you know, put in place this quote-unquote extreme vetting, which would be tougher procedures for people from these countries that they would face if they wanted to enter the U.S. Now, we've tried to track down what those procedures are today, and we were referred to the Justice Department, then referred us to the Department of Homeland Security, who didn't really have a great answer. So it's hard to say how much progress they've made on that front. But what critics are saying is that you don't really need the travel ban at this point because it's been about 5 months since the first one was issued, and that would be enough time for the administration to figure out what's going on and make changes.
We're talking to Jordan Fabian right now, White House correspondent for The Hill, and we're talking about President Trump's tweets criticizing the revised travel ban. And Jordan, all of this raises one question in particular. How much do the president's tweets matter? How much water do they hold?
I think they matter significantly. I know that the spokespeople at the White House say, you know, oh, they're only tweets and the media is making a big deal out of it. But and that may be true on some other topics. But on the travel ban, we've seen you know, his tweets make a significant difference. In fact, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals cited remarks and tweets that President Trump made about his revised travel ban and saying that, you know, basically that it was no different than the first one, and it was just meant to, you know, put this promised Muslim ban into place, the ban that he promised during the campaign. So, again, we've seen judges and lawyers take these tweets seriously.
Well, right, and that was one course of argument prior to all of these tweets, was that this was President Trump, or Donald Trump, the candidate speaking, not Donald Trump, the president. Now Donald Trump, the president, has said this. So do you see this rerouting the legal argument that the Department of Justice might have to take to get the travel ban through?
They're certainly going to have to make tweets if they want, or tweaks, excuse me, if they want to, you know, make a persuasive case to the judges, whether it's at the circuit level or the Supreme Court. They're going to have some kind of answer for, you know, why this policy should go into place, despite what the president is saying, given that what the president is saying has undercut some of the arguments they've made prior during legal cases.
So, it was a tough question to answer. We're speculating, but who do you think is the intended audience for President Trump's tweets? Is it his core supporters? Is it those in the legal system? Is it his own staff? Who is it?
Well, I think it's hard to argue that it's those in the legal system, because all of the lawyers that I've talked to are saying it's inconceivable that the president wasn't advised not to do this. So I think you have to determine then that this was targeted toward his core supporters. Look, this is a president who's, you know, facing low approval ratings, facing a controversy over Russia that's about to heat up on Thursday when the fired FBI Director James Comey testifies before Congress. So, some might say the president is trying to create some kind of distraction or point to another issue that animates his supporters to get them to rally behind him. And the travel ban is one of those policies.
What kind of reaction are you hearing from lawmakers?
Some of them are just dumbfounded by the whole situation, honestly. Some of them are making the argument some Republicans are saying that maybe he should just give up the travel ban and just go ahead with some of the, you know, quote unquote extreme vetting procedures that he wanted to do. That this is kind of a fool's errand at this point, because the administration has had a few months to figure out how to better screen travelers who are entering the U.S. So that's some of the reaction that we've heard today from members of Congress.
Now, looking at the site of the terror attacks, London's Mayor Sadiq Khan was also a target for the president's tweets, as you talked about. Do you see that having foreign policy ramifications, or maybe fraying some alliances?
Yeah, well, it's certainly going to make life difficult for UK Prime Minister Theresa May, who's facing election soon. She's under tremendous pressure abroad to, you know, condemn President Trump because he's very unpopular in the UK. But obviously she has got to walk a tightrope there because she wants to maintain a relationship with the leader of her country's closest ally. So this has put her in a really tough spot, you know, forcing her to respond to some of the things that the president has said about the mayor of London. So that certainly cannot be pleasant for her as she considers, what's going on and, you know, President Trump's, upcoming trip to the UK later this year. It's certainly going to have an effect.
So looking at the legal track of the travel ban, what's next?
Well, the Supreme Court is going to hear parties to the lawsuits next week make the case why they should take it up or why they shouldn't take it up. And this is, again, the administration's challenge to a lower court's decision to keep an injunction on this ruling in place. So what the Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to do is to lift this order. And so they're going to hear basically they're going to ask for memos from each side hearing their arguments, and then they'll make a decision whether to take up the case.
Jordan, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Jordan Fabian, White House correspondent for The Hill, and he was with us there to talk about President Trump's recent tweets criticizing the revised travel ban.
Right now, according to Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel, sex trafficking is one of the state's toughest criminal justice challenges. Several high-profile convictions of sex traffickers in recent years have revealed an active prostitution market radiating from Milwaukee. And in 2013, a nationwide FBI raid rescued 10 children from sex trafficking in Wisconsin. That's the third highest number of any state.
Girls and young women are often coerced into forced prostitution by boyfriends or other trusted figures and are held captive by abuse and manipulation. A new bipartisan bill in the state legislature aims to reduce the demand for sex trafficking by strengthening penalties on those who solicit prostitutes.
Democratic State Representative Amanda Stuck joins us now. She represents Wisconsin's 57th Assembly District in the Appleton area. She's a co-sponsor of the new bill. Representative Stuck, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, talk us through what would change under this proposed legislation.
So under this bill, a third offense of soliciting would actually be a felony. So right now it's misdemeanor and it would be raised to a felony just to make the third time a little bit more serious offense.
And can you talk about the need to focus on the demand side of things, the people who are soliciting prostitutes?
Yep. So for a long time, we did focus on sort of the supply side and punishing those who were providing or, you know, the people who consider the prostitutes or what we now know are really the victims in most cases in this type of situation. So this really is looking at identifying and addressing the demand side, because several police officers in my community in Appleton came to me and said that when they are showing up at these calls, what they're seeing so often are the same people over and over again, because the consequences aren't serious enough to stop people from doing it again, even once they've been caught. So they were hoping that we could start looking at more severe penalties, hopefully to curb the people that they're seeing numerous times.
Would this just increase the penalty, or is there an effort to increase the enforcement on that, on the supply side, on the customers here?
Yes. Certainly communities have been looking at trying to enforce this. I know in Appleton, they do a lot of work in trying to set up stings to catch people and really address this issue, because it is a huge issue here, even in the Fox Valley, since we do have a lot of hotels right off the highway. We do have a lot of special events that drive increased demand for these types of situations. So it is something that we need to look at from the supply side and look at addressing the actual enforcement of it. But what's happening is we are enforcing it, but people then don't really have a consequence, even after they're caught again, because it's only a misdemeanor. It really does not have any severe consequences for the people.
Let's talk a little bit about the scope of the problem. We mentioned a few numbers at the outset. Can you talk about how big a concern this is, sex trafficking is here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's a huge issue, especially in the Milwaukee area. But what we're seeing is that even including the Fox Valley, anything that's off the 41 corridor is seeing increased numbers in sex trafficking. So it's a huge issue here. As far as actual numbers, it's really hard to tell because there's so much more than what is even caught. But we do know that it's something that the Fox Valley created a task force on several years ago, because they saw such an increasing problem with sex trafficking in our area.
And is this something that's an intercity problem, that the same people might be trafficked from Milwaukee to the Fox Cities, or even out of the state altogether?
Exactly. People are moved around the state. They're moved in and out of states. And that's part of what makes it so hard to get exact numbers. But that's why it's so important to start looking at what we can do on the demand side to really stop the demand for these people.
And is there, is part of the hope here that just the existence of the tougher penalties will be a deterrent? You might not even have to apply the penalty itself that often?
That's definitely the hope. I mean, we would always hope that people just don't engage versus having to punish people or have people face these penalties. But that's definitely the hope that the police officers that brought this to me had, because they were saying a lot of these people actually have families and are married, but because the consequences are so light, you know, a lot of times the families don't even find out that they've been caught or been in trouble for it. And so there's just no real consequence or reason for people to stop engaging in this behavior because the penalties are so light right now.
Yeah, let's talk about those current penalties a bit. Your law would change this to the third time someone's caught, it's no longer a misdemeanor, it would be a felony. I mean, on the first two instances, is that currently a misdemeanor?
Yes. Yep. So right now you would just get fines, misdemeanor. So again, you wouldn't be looking at jail time or anything for the first or second offense, just simply a fine.
And under the current system, is it just a misdemeanor on the third and, I don't know, fifth or tenth time for that matter?
Yes, it just is a misdemeanor at this point, which is why the officers want to see some more increased penalties, like some other states have done. There are a few states who are starting to move in this direction where they also have third offense becomes a felony.
Yeah, what? How many states have done this now?
I believe it's like four or five states. I know it includes Florida and Michigan and at least two other states.
Talking to Democratic State Representative Amanda Stuck from the Appleton area. She is a co-sponsor of bipartisan legislation aimed at cracking down on people who solicit prostitution. The goal to get rid of some of the money that comes into sex trafficking here in Wisconsin and around the country. I mentioned bipartisan support on this. Can you talk about this as a bipartisan effort?
Yep. Fortunately, this is one issue where we can agree across the aisle pretty easily. You know, nobody thinks that sex trafficking is something that we shouldn't address here. And so when the officers in my community came forward with this idea, I definitely saw that there'd be an opportunity to work across the aisle. So I did reach out to Representative Clayfish and reached out to see if he would be interested in sponsoring this with me, and he was interested. He's done other work on sex trafficking issues in the past and other bills, and so this is something he said he would like to work together on, and so we put it forward together, and I do think we'll have a lot of support from both sides of the aisle on this.
Yeah, I know this is new legislation, but have you been hearing positive things from your colleagues?
Yep. Yeah, a lot of people do like this idea. And again, because a lot of the times, unfortunately, the punishment really has come down on the supply side, so on the women and girls and people that are being trafficked. And more we're starting to understand that a lot of this isn't by choice. A lot of this is by people who are being forced to under the threat of harm to their children or harm to themselves if they don't participate in this activity. So it's really starting to, you know, look at how we address this legislatively outside of just simply punishing people who are really victims in most cases.
Looking more at those victims now, does the state do enough to make it easy for them to report their predicament, their situation, or is that maybe a next step?
Yeah, those are the kind of things we've also been having conversations about. You know, I know this is something else the officers have brought to me, is even looking at how do we keep these victims without holding them in jail, because, you know, right now what's really difficult is police can't really keep these victims to help connect them with services without charging them with a crime. Now, of course, they don't want to charge these victims with a crime to be able to hold them, but it makes it difficult for them then to help these victims get connected with services. So we've definitely been looking about what do we do to really reach out to these people, and when the police interact with them, be able to help them versus either just letting them go or having to charge them with a crime. Because they know once they let them go, they just end up right back in the circle.
Is this a mindset change that we as a society need to have? Because as you say, a lot of law enforcement efforts in the past around the country have been toward the person who may be the victim in the case, the person being sex trafficked.
Yep, I think it's something that we still need to work on from, you know, a lot of people, I think that this is a voluntary activity in most cases, and sometimes it is, but for the most part, these are really people, again, when you hear stories of victims, even from the Fox Valley area, it's really heartbreaking. I mean, these are stories of people who are chained up in apartments in between times when they're being trafficked, or who are, again, people are holding their children, saying that they will harm their children if they don't participate in this, and so we really need to look at it from that perspective when we're drawing up legislation and really make it be about services to the victims rather than punishing them.
And the one part of the equation we haven't talked about is the sex traffickers themselves, the people, in, as you mentioned, holding someone in chains or threatening the victim or their families. What are you hearing from police officers when it comes to their enforcement options there?
Yeah, and again, that is something that they want to look at, something that they realize is a big part of the problem and the issue if we really want to address this. And so, again, I think it comes down to they would like to see more penalties, better able to really have consequences for these people. Though sometimes it's very difficult in these situations to identify who those people are and to make sure that they do get the consequence. We know when you have victims that are afraid to speak out, when you have people that are moving around and mobile, these cases can be pretty difficult.
Getting back to the intent of your legislation, as you mentioned, the third offense for someone soliciting prostitution would now be a felony. A caller called in wondering why wait for the third offense? Why not the first or second?
Well, you know, I think ideally, you know, felony is pretty serious, and it has very severe consequences for people in their lives in terms of ability to work in the future, ability to get housing. And so you'd like to think, hopefully, somebody who gets caught the first time would have a learning opportunity through this. So a lot of the times when what we call Johns, people who are the demand side, engage in this activity, a lot of them don't really understand what the victims are going through. And so when they get caught, a lot of times police departments will offer an educational opportunity, what they call John School, for these guys to go through and learn about really how the system works and this isn't voluntary, and about how a lot of these people are victims. And so we hope that, you know, that first or second time would be an opportunity for education to really reach out and make people understand what is going on here. But then by the third time, they should have had a chance to learn, and then we need to get pretty serious on cracking down on it.
What is your timeline for getting this through the legislature?
It is circulating now for co-sponsorship. Once it is done with that, then it will go to a committee. So we'd like to have it done here, hopefully before the end of the year, if not earlier. But it's moving along pretty quickly through the process right now.
And are you hoping to bring your local police officials to the Capitol to testify on the need for this?
Yep. As soon as the committee would be willing to hold a hearing on it, we would definitely reach out and invite the officers that brought this idea to me to come down and testify.
Representative Stuck, thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
That was Democratic State Representative Amanda Stuck of Appleton, co-sponsor of a new bipartisan bill that aims to reduce sex trafficking by strengthening penalties on people who solicit prostitution, as we heard, making the third offense a felony instead of a misdemeanor, which it currently is. Each month, one of the directors of Wisconsin Public Radio joins us on an Ideas Network show on the first Monday of the month to share information about WPR and answer your questions.
Mike Arnold is with us today to share the latest on our WPR Next project, to preview more WPR centennial celebrations and more. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Wisconsin Public Radio and what's on the air? Do you have questions about things you'd like to hear? And how do you listen on a radio, on a computer, on your phone? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
WPR's Director of Content, Mike Arnold, is in the studio with us. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, WPR Next still going along. Remind us what WPR Next is all about, Mike.
It's basically a way for us to try out some new program ideas. It's a program incubator project, and we have four shows, Because Science.
Right.
I just looked at Veronica.
Right, at Veronica.
You couldn't see that on the air. Beta, Entertain Us, and Wisconsin Life Weekend. I think Wisconsin Life Weekend was on last weekend, wasn't it?
Coming up this weekend.
Oh, it's coming up
actually.
This weekend. Okay, great. Yeah, Beta was last. No, Entertain Us was last weekend. I'm so confused.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, we've got a lot of shows, and they're airing. And I want to give a little listen to give a taste of Wisconsin Life Weekend, since that's the one still coming up. And here's just a sense of what it's all about.
My dad, who has no college degree, used to read the dictionary, and he named me sagacious. And I asked my dad, why did you name me sagacious? Because I'm the only one in my I have 11 other siblings. Their names are like Chandra, Sean, Kyle, Paul, Isaac, right? I'm the only sagacious, right? So why me? And my dad said, because I wanted you to live up to your name. That was important to me. And so as time went on, when I became an adult, I said, Dad, there's a word right across from my name, salacious. You know, one letter different, it would have been the pole for me, Dad. I would have been right there swinging on the pole, right? And here I am at the podium, right? Like, that was one letter different. And then I realized that he understood that, and that name was very intentional. By the time he got to me, he was saying, enough. There's something that's happening in our family. And if I call you something different, if I call you wise every day, then maybe you arise.
So that's the kind of story we might hear on Wisconsin Life Weekend, and it's an extension of what we hear and see on Wisconsin Life on WPR and Wisconsin Public Television. Tell us a little more about Wisconsin Life Weekend.
Yeah, Wisconsin Life Weekend will be, it talks to people around the state and looks at different parts of the state, slightly different than the Wisconsin Life that you normally hear, so it's definitely worth giving it a listen this weekend. And that was a great interview. Actually, the whole interview is really good to listen to, and that's coming up on the Ideas Network this Saturday at 10 in the place of Ask Me Another, which will be back. And it's on Sunday at 11 in the place of Car Talk, which we'll be back to after this weekend. So if you want to hear that, you can do that. If you prefer to listen on News and Classical, it's Saturday at 3 p.m. on that station.
And as I understand it, we are looking for feedback. We want to hear what people think of these new shows.
Yes, we're asking people what they think quite a bit. Some people say, do you really want to put these on the air and let people hear them? And we said, yeah, that's what we'd like to do. We'd like to hear what people think. And some of the people have said, I'd prefer to hear the program that was normally on. But we've also had some people with really great feedback on the programs and have been able to tell us what they think, and also have a survey online that people can take. So we're hoping that you will recognize that the shows that we're preempting will be back, and really listen to the shows and let us know what you think.
And also at WPR Next, I think people can do that survey and check out all four of the shows if
you
don't want to go back in time to listen to them on the air. This is exciting stuff. I mean, you worked with us on Central Time.
Yeah.
It's exciting stuff to make a new show.
Yeah, it's fun to try something new, and it's also fun to kind of hear what people think of it. So we hope that you'll play along with us as we try out these new program ideas on Wisconsin Public Radio. It should be fun.
Talking to Mike Arnold, Director of Content here at WPR, looking at what's going on behind the scenes, sometimes in front of the scenes, too, at Wisconsin Public Radio. Some big news, Mike, about this very familiar voice.
Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller.
I went all the way back to Friday to find that archival audio. Yeah, that was Larry introducing Garden Talk just last Friday. Larry, big news here. He was inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and I thought he wasn't already in it. But
right.
He is now.
Yeah, he is now, and it's well-deserved. Larry has been at Wisconsin Public Radio for 50 years here at the station, and he began hosting the Larry Mueller Show in 1978, which isn't quite 50 years ago. It's 30-something. I don't know. I can't do math right now. And it's the longest-running call-in show in Wisconsin. So, you know, he's also a much-loved professor at UW College of Agricultural Life Science for the past 40 years. And he's inspired and mentored thousands of students in excellence in broadcasting, and also inspires a lot of listeners on a regular basis. So I think he really deserves to be in the Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. It's really a great honor for Larry, and he deserves it.
And I think we could say behind the scenes, without fear of contradiction, he's a pretty nice fellow to work with.
Oh, yeah. He's very nice.
And he knows...
Probably the nicest person here.
He knows everything.
Yeah, he does.
Wait, you just looked at us after you said nicest person here. I can't.
You guys are the second and third.
I can't argue. Larry's a nicer guy than I am. I can't contest that. So a big congratulations to Larry, Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame. Well-deserved there. And speaking of recognition here at WPR, I hold in my hand a list of awards recently won by Wisconsin Public Radio and the reporters here and others. I mean, we could just take the whole time reading the awards. We're not going to do that. But do you want to give us some highlights, Mike?
Well, yeah, we had a lot of awards, including Best Radio Website Award, First Place Award for WisConText, which is a new partnership we have with Wisconsin Public Television and University of Wisconsin Extension. We received all sorts of stuff, just all sorts of awards. And, you know, at some places, at some radio stations, it's like one person who wins awards, and that's it. It's like, okay, Dave won an award again, and everybody goes, oh, boy, Dave, he's always winning. But here we have a lot of people who have won. Bridget Bowden won a number of awards. Maureen McCollum won some awards. We had an award from Glenn Moberg. Won an award. Let me see who else. Rich Kramer. I mean, a lot of the names that you hear on a regular basis were awarded, and this isn't just like, you know, backslapping or anything. These are judged by people who are broadcasters in other states, so they don't know who these people are, and they're actually listening to them, and they're saying, boy, this is really good. They deserve an award. So it's a big deal, and we've really seen quite an uptick in awards for WPR. So that's an exciting thing, because news is important to us.
Yeah, bragging about our news team a bit. I mean, you hear it's kind of a cliche, the award-winning news team when you think of like a news channel or something like that. We don't say it much, but our news people win a lot of awards.
Yeah, it's very impressive, and it's an important part of our mission here. I think we're very focused on providing in-depth coverage of Wisconsin, and thankfully, people are recognizing that.
It's Mondays with Mike. We're talking to WPR's Director of Content, Mike Arnold, about what's going on here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions or comments do you have for Mike about WPR's programming? What keeps you a loyal listener? And what can we do to make that experience even better? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're talking right now in studio with Mike Arnold, WPR's Director of Content, about what's going on at Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can join the conversation.
Call in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, comments, suggestions about the stuff you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Oh, let's go to our callers now. We've got Peter on the line in Madison. Peter, hi.
Hey, so I really like Central Time, and
thank
I'm
you.
Wondering if there's any chance that you might replace your morning programming with something similar in tone to Central Time. I find Dark Hardin just to be unlistenable, and I actually end up turning off the radio at night because, you know, and going to the BBC on another station because I know I'm going to have to wake up to Joy Cardine, and I just find that so unpleasant. So I'm wondering if you, you know, as long as you're shaking things up, you know, you got rid of what do you know, which I think was awesome. Thank you for doing that. It was long past due. But I'm wondering if you might make some shakeups in the morning, too, because that would think be a nice breath of fresh air.
Peter, thanks for calling. And we sometimes hear, why can't Central Time be more like Joy? And sometimes we hear, why can't Joy be more like Central Time? We got a little something for everybody and obviously something that we'll turn away some people like Peter,
yeah,
too.
There's some people, listeners to Wisconsin Public Radio, it's kind of like the Donnie and Marie show. Some people are a little bit country. And some people are a little bit rock and roll, except here it's like some people are more a little more Central Time and some are a little more Joy. And so, you know, it's highly subjective what people think about different shows. But it's obvious that Peter would like something a little more peppy. We'll certainly keep that in mind. But also want to remind you, Peter, that there are a lot of people who really enjoy Joy Cardine's show as well. There are a lot of enthusiastic fans to that program. But we appreciate you calling and letting us know what you think, and also hearing some support for trying different things on Wisconsin Public Radio. So thanks, Peter, for that call.
And I'll say between the shows, too, we do bounce ideas back and forth and I think inspire each other a little bit and compete to have a better show, too, for that matter. So you hear a little bit of what goes on in the morning. A lot of us here worked on Joy's show in the past. So a lot of back and forth there. We'll go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hi.
Hi. Well, I really like Central Time. I have to say that first.
Thanks.
Especially when both of you hosts are on together. I think it's even stronger. But I like that new science show that Veronica's doing. I think science doesn't nearly get enough exposure. And I like the person from Discover Magazine. I think they're helping you with that show.
Gemma Tarlak, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy her, so that I would put in a vote for that show to stay.
Kay, thank you so much for that feedback. And we are, as we mentioned earlier, Mike, looking for feedback on Because Science and the other WPR Next programs.
Yes, we are. And Kay, we appreciate that. A ringing endorsement of Veronica's pilot that was on. And Veronica seems happy, too. She actually did thumbs up when she said that. So we appreciate that call and appreciate your support in trying out some new things.
Okay, thanks for calling in. Before we go back to our callers, Mike, a couple other pieces of news I want to get into before we are done. Chapter a Day, long-running show at Wisconsin Public Radio. It's had some voices, including Michelle Good, sitting across the table from us. They're looking for some new voices, too, now.
Yeah.
They're looking for a new voice, right?
Chapter a Day is looking for a new reader. It started in 1931. Chapter is WPR's longest-running program. And the new reader would join Jim Fleming, Norman Gilliland, Michelle Good, and Susan Sweeney to read from a book each weekday. So if you've always wanted to be, if you're one of those people where, you know, you're at a party and you're talking about something, they go, wow, you have a really good voice. You ought to do Chapter a Day. Well, now you have your chance. So if you want to figure out how to do it, we have all the details about the audition process and requirement at WPR.org. /audition. And it's really a great way to be a part of the WPR family. And it's a pretty open call. So if you can read and you think you can do it, you really should enter your name into this. They'll be asked to do a 5 to 7 minute audio reading that you'll have to submit to us, but, go for it. We're looking forward to having lots of people apply for this for Chapter a Day.
WPR.org/audition if you want to give that a shot. Back to our callers now with Nancy in Minocqua. Nancy, hi.
Hi there. I have a question. How do you go about getting an idea that you have on the radio?
Well,
I have an idea for a show called Explore Wisconsin, where you would have someone come on once a week and tell about what festivals in all the areas of Wisconsin that are going on, so people from other areas can hear what's going on in the different part of Wisconsin.
That would be interesting. And, Nancy, that's something we used to do more on Central Time and haven't in a while. I remember talking about Gator Days was that in Sparta or near Sparta, and other festivals around the state. So do you have one you want to plug? I know, Beef-A-Rama, right, in Minocqua.
Well, not even just that. I listen a lot to NPR, Wisconsin Public Radio, and I love to go all over the place to go to different festivals, and usually the ones I hear about are the ones in my area, but I don't hear about the ones that are in Lower East Wisconsin or in Milwaukee, or just now recently there was some type of a cheese fest over in Green Bay over the weekend, but I didn't even know it was going on until I saw it on Facebook after it was done.
Gotcha, Nancy. Thank you for that suggestion. So more promos and information and interviews about the unique festivals around Wisconsin.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we're thinking about in looking at these program ideas, is how we might be able to have something on that's here in Wisconsin that might be able to tune you into stuff like that. So thanks for that feedback, Nancy. We appreciate it.
And we are talking with Mike Arnold, Director of Content here at WPR. It's Mondays with Mike, looking at what's going on behind the scenes at Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go back to your calls, I want to have NPR's Scott Simon set up our next topic for us. Here's a listen.
One of the oldest radio stations in this country celebrates its 100th birthday this year. Wisconsin Public Radio and WHA helped develop the framework for the public radio system we're familiar with today, so we asked WPR's Maureen McCollum to tell us about her station's legacy.
So Maureen's piece aired this weekend on Weekend Editions. The whole country got a look at our history here, Mike, and meantime, we're celebrating. What do we have going on? What's coming up?
We have a lot of centennial events. Maybe you attended. There was a big Simply Folk one last week. There were like 700 people there. It was pretty crazy in Wausau. But coming up, we have some really cool things, too. We have Larry at Lambeau. That's June 22nd. Larry Mueller's appearance at Lambeau Field, where he'll welcome guests to discuss the history of the Green Bay Packers. Guests will include the Packers CEO, President Mark Murphy, and team historian Cliff Christie. I hear there are some people who are Packers fans.
There are a couple out there.
A few, yeah. And then we have some great old-time radio drama presentations. They're going to be doing a couple shows, one in Door County and one at Big Top Chautauqua in Bayfield. And then we also have a big centennial celebration in the fall. It's a grand celebration of the centennial year, and it's in Madison with NPR's Ari Shapiro and a cast of at least a few other people. and if you want to find out about those events, all you have to do is go to WPR.org/100. You can either do 100, but I think you can also write out 100 and you'll still get there. So lots of things to see on there, including a chance for you to kind of walk through time at Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a really cool timeline
on the centennial
site, and you can look at things, you can listen to things, you can watch videos. It's really cool. So hope you'll check that out, WPR.org/100.
I have an update. Our producer, Amanda Magnus, lets us know Gatorfest, I was wrong, is not in Sparta. It's near Sparta in Leon. Butterfest is in Sparta this weekend, actually. A caller let us know that one. Thanks for that information. Back to our callers now. Jim is with us in Mequon. Jim, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Jim?
Just a quick question. I have listened to University of the Air for years, and I just love it because it's so consistent with the original mission of Wisconsin Public Radio. But I've noticed in recent months that even though for years Norman and Emily would usually interview someone together, now it always seems to be one or the other of them. Is that a deliberate show change or you know, it's no big deal, but I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, Jim, that is something that we've made a change with. It just gives Norman and Emily a chance to have more control over the show and do a wider range of topics. So we did make that change, and they both seem pretty happy with the transition. Although I do miss sometimes hearing them both on at the same time, but it seems to work out better that way for the show, and that it allows us to do a broader range of topics.
Jim, thanks for that call. We heard from Deb on Facebook, who says, I love Joy Cardine and Kathleen Dunn. Well, so do we. Thanks for the feedback there. And again, you can keep sharing your feedback on the Central Time Facebook page. Back to our callers. Roberta is with us in Madison. Roberta, hi.
Hi there. Actually, while I was waiting, I thought of another comment, and that would be, I like the fact that you repeat some of the programming, because maybe I'm not able to listen to it, you know, that afternoon, but it comes on, you know, maybe on the weekend or something like that. But the real purpose that I had called is I enjoy watching Charlie Rose on PBS because there's a flow to his conversations with, you know, one or two or three people.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get breaks in between. And I've noticed that it seems like lately there's more in-house advertising, you know, like Kathleen Dunn will be talking and then she'll break to advertise who comes up next
mm-hmm.
on her program. Frankly, I find that kind of, I don't know, maybe a little insulting to the person who's there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it spoils the flow of the conversation.
Interesting. Roberta, thanks a lot for that call. Mike?
Yeah, I we do hear that from people sometimes. I think that one of the reasons we do that is because of the way radio works, it's a little different from TV. So it's less of a destination thing and more somebody's driving around and they want to know what's going on. So it does help from time to time for radio listeners to be reminded of what's coming up or even who we're talking to sometimes. So we do have to interrupt in that way. One of the things we try to do though is have, I mean, we haven't increased the amount of, announcements about businesses or promotional announcements or things like that on the air. So we try to make it as unobtrusive as possible, but it sounds like based on your feedback, Roberta, that we could be a little more gentle about that. So that's something we can keep in mind in the future.
Thanks for all your calls. And Mike, I want to get into a couple of things real quick. Wisconsin Remembers, this is something we've been working on a little bit. What's going on?
Yeah, that is a traveling exhibit that we have that is a display that features a face for every Wisconsin veteran on the Vietnam Veterans Wall in Washington, and it's traveling around the state all year. And a list of where it will be displayed is available at WPR.org/veterans. It really is moving to see. We had it set up here at the station for a while, and it's just it's amazing to see how young some of the people were who were lost in Vietnam and who served their country. So it's a really good way to remember that.
And I was just on a WPR trip in D.C. and saw the Vietnam Wall and some of the names of people from Wisconsin and elsewhere. Very powerful. I still haven't made the Wisconsin Remembers display, though it was here at the studio for a while. So that is very powerful as well. Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today. Next month, you or Mike Crane will be on the Joy Cardine Show.
Mike Crane will probably be back next month. So, yes.
That was Mike Arnold, Director of Content here at Wisconsin Public Radio on this month's edition of Mondays with Mike. You can always share your thoughts with us, by the way. You can contact WPR's Audience Services team. They're happy to talk to you at 800-747-7444.
Adams.
Here.
Adam Lee.
Here.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid is going with the girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. I guess it's pretty serious.
Thank you, Simone.
No problem whatsoever.
So, where was Ferris Bueller exactly? Well, he was skipping school, apparently on this very day in 1985.
If you've never seen it before, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a movie about a high school kid playing hooky in Chicago. That's pretty much it, but it's the day every high school kid dreams about.
So why do we think it was today? Well, there's a scene at a Chicago Cubs game, and a sports writer used the evidence provided in the movie to pin down the exact date, which puts it at today, June 5th in the year 1985.
Some good detective work there. That is a movie that gets referenced a lot, a big pop culture milestone for a lot of people.
For our generation,
definitely.
One might say Gen Xers, and I haven't watched it in a while, but I have a feeling it holds up okay.
Yeah, it was a nice day today. I actually was thinking of playing hooky. Oh, wait,
yeah.
Our boss is still sitting right next
to you. You were trying to convince me.
Ixnay
yeah.
on the
Sorry.
Hooky. Hey, yeah. There's a fan theory, too, that Ferris Bueller never existed. He was hallucinated by his friend Cameron.
Yeah, I love that. I got to think about that.
We'll leave you with that thought on Central Time.